Hi, everybody. I'm Scott.
Hello, I'm Julie.
And this is A Good Story is Hard to Find,
where two Catholic friends talk about the books and movies they love and the traces of the one reality they see under the surface.
That's right. And this is episode number 50.
And a brand new year.
This is like episode one of season three.
Oh, yeah, I guess it is.
There's going to be just major happenings this whole season. It's going to be incredible.
We've rewritten all of it.
I'm just hoping that I don't get written out of the script at some point.
I was just going to say, characters die off, new characters are introduced.
Yeah, we brought in this new writer. His name is George R.R. Martin.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. Neither of us are going to be here at the end.
Every episode is 10 hours long.
Oh, man. Speaking of 10 hours long, Tam sent me a link today of a thing that said CBS picked up Under the Dome by Stephen King for 13 episodes.
Really?
So I'm hoping that means 13 episodes and done, not 13 episodes and then another season.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, if they tell the story in 13, that might be pretty darn good.
Oh, yeah.
I'm a fan of the Stephen King miniseries.
Well, I know that you said that the book was...
I never finished the book. I read maybe the first quarter.
Okay. And, but sometimes those work better as a miniseries.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. You know, like The Stand, if they had tried to make a film out of that. I mean, either way, you know, The Stand as a miniseries was okay. Wasn't the best thing I'd ever seen, but it was pretty good. But I'm glad it's not a series, and I'm glad it's not a movie. So...
Well, that would be torturous.
It would.
So,
although I would like to see Mother Abigail, I like Mother Abigail.
Who doesn't like Mother Abigail? Other than people who want to live with the
Randall
Walk
Flag.
A Dude in Las Vegas, which, by the way, to harken back to old episodes, Rose actually is trying to struggle her way through The Stand.
Oh.
Which actually she's keeps saying, oh, no, I like it. It's just got a slow start, which I never found to be the case.
No, I didn't find that either. It was interesting.
Yeah. So
lots of people having some
trouble listening to the podcast. So,
well, good. Go ahead, Rose. Finish it up. That'll be fun.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
I sure enjoy both yours and Rose's posts on Letterboxd.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, I'm enjoying that. And, you know, I don't know how you get on Letterboxd now. Hopefully they'll open that up. I'm assuming that they're doing it by invitation only until they get running good or something. I don't know. We're still in beta version or something.
Have we mentioned Letterboxd?
I'm not sure if we have.
I don't think we have.
Letterboxd is LetterboxD, as in dog.
.com.
Yeah. And...
It's basically the answer to a Goodreads for movies.
Yeah, yeah.
Tamahome, again, he's so handy with all those resources. He sent us the link, and basically what you could do, if you're interested, you can go look around, and you can go ask them for an invitation. And I think when Scott and I did it, it took a couple weeks, and then we got invitations, and we were allowed to invite three people each.
Yep, yep.
Many of which three people don't do anything. I'm just going to say, although Rose does. So,
you bet.
But yeah. So, and it's I like it because, as with Goodreads, where what it does is it kind of gives me a spot where I can just drop quick little comments and reviews about books.
Yeah.
I find myself I can do that about movies. So after I've watched a movie, I go in the next day, I give it however many stars, make a little comment, and then if I want to put it on my blog or whatever. It's easy to just pull it out and fix it or embellish it if I want to and do it. It's mostly done.
Yeah, and the feature that I like most about it is the diary feature, which allows me – that's basically how I've been using it. I haven't been kind of going back and trying to think of all the things I've seen. I just figured, okay, I'm going to start here, and that was back in December. And then every time I watch something, I'm going to put it on there. And there's a diary button that'll show you on this day you watch this, on this day you watch that.
Right.
So far this year – this is the only movie I've watched.
I was
the day the earth stood still.
I was just saying, Mm-hmm. But you haven't been watching many movies because I haven't seen it show up in the little activity thread.
No, I usually watch at least one a week. But this week we had, bringing Chris back to school and all kinds of stuff was going on this week. So I'm just getting to normal here.
Okay.
Back in the swing.
And I watched an inordinate number of movies because our regular TV shows were on hiatus. And Rose was home, who brought a bunch of movies with her. She just knew we had to see.
Oh, cool.
And then I had a feature on my blog, Happy Catholic, called Movies You Might Have Missed.
Yes.
I still have quite a few I need to put.
Favorite features of your blog.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome.
But I'm trying to fairly regularly put some of those onto Letterboxd. So, because the thing I like about it is that you can have lists that are proper lists.
Mm, yeah.
And so you can make a list called Movies You Might Have Missed or Movies I've Seen a Million Times or There's Another 2 Hours I'll Never Get Back. And so that's kind of fun.
That was fun. Yeah. And I'm already finding stuff to watch. I just today got in the mail from Netflix a documentary called The Cutting Edge, Magic of Movie Editing, which Rose reviewed. And I'm really eager to see it. So she is an editor, right?
She is an editor. That is what she does.
So yeah, it'll be neat to watch this because, I know probably what most people know about editing movies, which is, they kind of string it together. So I'm eager to see what this has to show me.
We know a little more because we've been educated.
I'm sure you do.
And Tom got interested and started reading, books and articles and everything. But I don't think we've seen that. I'll have to.
Yeah, she reviewed it on Letterboxd, and so I grabbed it.
Yeah.
But yeah, it'd be interesting to see a poorly edited movie next. We're about to talk about Robert Wise, who directed The Day the Earth Stood Still. And he directed Star Trek, the motion picture.
the first
Star Trek movie, right?
But also The Sound of Music.
Yeah, and The Sound of Music,
he did
right?
Such different things.
Yeah. Now, the Star Trek movie recently, and by recently I mean like within the last 10 years, they came out with a director's cut. And
really?
It didn't only mean that it was longer. It seemed to me that it was re-edited in some way that made the director happier. I don't recall when Mr. Wise passed away, but but I remember reading this review that said, "Oh my goodness, this is a really good movie now." Okay,
really.
So I watched it. And I felt pretty much the same way about it that I had before. So I'm really, but I hadn't seen the Star Trek, the motion picture for a long time because it was one that I ignored after 2 came out. Like everyone. So, we could review Star Trek, but it's a very kind of a long, like 2001, A Space Odyssey. There was a lot of, check out these effects and look how it's like in space and I'm walking around and it's weightless and took all this time to walk around in circles. So you'll have seriously 5 minutes of flying around the Enterprise and looking at it.
Say that this new one was maybe edited more the way the director wanted. What I remember reading is that Gene Roddenberry had such creative control over the movie.
Yeah.
That I wonder if Robert Wise's hands were tied.
Yeah, they sure might
because
have
Because that's
been.
Why they wouldn't sure want to touch the Wrath of Khan.
Yeah, yeah. And it's interesting that Gene Roddenberry had the reins there because he changed some characters fundamentally, like Spock having dropped his humanity. The thing that made Spock the most interesting was rejected by Spock completely. That he became a totally different person. And I don't know. I didn't like Spock as much.
I just remember Stephen Collins and the bald Indian lady.
Yes.
Who was so pretty. And I kept thinking, why wouldn't they let her keep her hair? Okay. Fine.
Yeah, right.
Well,
so anyway,
let's talk about another. So, yeah. Now that we've caught up from the New Year's, that's can you right, tell we haven't talked right. much?
The Day the Earth Stood Still from 1951. Yeah, this is your pick,
and it's such a good movie.
Oh, it's a great movie. Again, directed by Robert Wise.
1951.
Okay.
Black and white.
Black and white. Yep.
Classic
movie.
Flying it is. Saucer.
It's a nice 1950s giant science robot. Fiction movie, but it's smart. It has a really strong female lead who, you know, doesn't act like a whole lot of other 50s movie actresses did. You know, she was very smart. And it was based on a short story called Farewell to the Master, which was written by Harry Bates in 1940. And the stars were Michael Rene, Patricia Neal, Sam Jaffe, and Hugh Marlowe.
And Patricia Neal's the only one I know out of that.
I couldn't tell you what other movies she's been in. Do you have any?
No, but she was in movies for a long time, and she actually, now I wish I'd have checked this first, but she, I believe, was a strong Catholic.
Oh, really?
And she had an affair with somebody and either lost the baby or had an abortion and spent the rest of her life really strongly regretting it. And it made her
no kidding.
Grow stronger in her faith. And now, see if I'm wrong about this, you have to cut this all out, Scott. if not, wow. There's somebody just like her who did that. Because I was so surprised to see that. Because my only knowledge of her otherwise is I'm the age that I remember seeing an aged Patricia Neal doing Anacin commercials because of her headaches, migraine headaches she would have. So, and then my dad would always say, well, you know, she had a stroke and came back from it. So that's why she's good for this commercial. And I go, okay. So
fascinating.
She's a very strong actress in this.
She is. And it was, I think that's one of the things that when I first saw this movie, I was like, you know, when I first watched it, it was years ago, and I thought, you know, I should go back and see some of these old movies that everybody likes, you know, and see what they are, even though I expected very little, you know, black and white 1950s science fiction movie, you know, maybe there'll be ants or giant spiders or scientists saying, what we see here, Bob, is a blah, 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 blah. You know, that's what I expected to see, but that's not at all what this is. This is a really, really good movie.
It's compelling because, do you mind if I just tell a little bit?
No, go right ahead.
I mean, I'm assuming people have probably seen it if they're listening, but because basically it just starts right off with, oh my gosh, something crazy is happening. And around the world, you're seeing people report on it.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, they were already doing that around the world. Here's this. And
people talking on the radio. Wow, there's a spacecraft coming in and it's going 4,000 miles an hour.
It's going so fast. We can't believe it. And then it's on Calcutta radio in India and in Paris. And so, a flying saucer lands on the mall in Washington, D.C.
Right on the mall. And
and out comes a giant
right in front of the White House, pretty much.
Yep.
And
first comes out the space.
Right, Klaatu. Klaatu comes out first. And Klaatu puts his hand up and he says, I come in peace, or something very similar.
He says, I have this for you. And he reaches in his
and he reaches in his coat where you'd normally have a gun if you were a bad guy.
Somebody shoots him.
And somebody shoots him.
Because that's how we are. Well, he's ringed with tanks and big soldiers with guns by then.
Amazing. And then the poor guy gets shot. He isn't killed, though. He's very human looking. In fact, pretty much human in every way, which they never tried to explain at all.
No, they said he's just exactly like us, except for these things. Right. Well,
there was a scene that made me laugh out loud. Go ahead. Sorry.
In the soldier's defense, he was wearing his helmet the whole time. So later when he's saying, well, we've monitored all your radio and TV and all this, I'm like, what? And you didn't know this would freak everybody out? You know, show us you have a face.
That's right. That's true. That is funny. One thing that made me laugh out loud is they bring Klaatu to the hospital and the doctor goes in there and then he comes out and he says, oh my goodness. You know, he said he's 78 years old.
Right.
And their life expectancy is like 130 as he's lighting a cigarette.
You know? We did the same thing. Everyone's smoking like chimneys. And they're like, oh, wow, really?
Oh, shoot. Yeah. Yeah. He makes me think I'm from the Dark Ages, and he lights up a smoke.
Well, and the funny thing is, you know, we can make fun of all these little things because, you know, here we are so much later.
Yeah.
Like when they were, I'm not going to let him out. And he turns the lock on the door. And I'm like, oh, well, watch out then. Because a guy with a spaceship like that's not going to have anything that can get past that lock on that door.
Yeah. And even the space guy, even Klaatu, just smiles at that clock.
Yeah.
He heard it. Snick.
An ironic smile because he was an ironic funny. Kind of amused fellow.
Yeah.
And but
they didn't even show him escape, but it was just like, no problem.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But despite that, you know, some of those are just anachronisms. But so they take him, they examine him. He's got things like a salve that will cure the bullet hole in a day or in a whatever. And a general comes to talk to him and he says, well, I do have a message, but I can't tell you. And he's like, well, then the president. He's like, no, it's for everyone. Oh, well, I don't think that's going to work. And Klaatu's like, kind of like, actually, it's not up to you. He doesn't really say that, but he's kind of like, I'm not budging. And the general goes away and he comes back and he's like, well, as I feared. He's like, too bad. Yeah. I have to talk to everyone.
And this is one of the things that science fiction does so well. I mean, when Star Trek, for example, Star Trek VI leaps to mind, but I know that there were shows, but Star Trek VI was about the United States and Russia, really, represented by the Federation and the Klingon Empire, the bad guys being the Klingons.
Of course.
But now we are in a movie made in 1951. Recently, an atomic bomb. We dropped an atomic bomb on Japan. The Korean War was just starting. The United Nations had been formed, but a whole lot of people still didn't believe, you know, hell, today they still don't believe that it's of any use.
Very effective,
But the people who made it hoped that nations would be civilized enough to come before this group. And then if the group voted, hey, we don't want you doing that, as the world doesn't want you doing that, that they'll stop, you know.
Right.
But that doesn't happen, you know. So this movie is a direct commentary on that situation at that time. It's a situation when it was made. So, you know, this guy from space says, hey, I need to talk to everybody. How about you get all the heads of state together? And this representative of the president said, I don't think that can happen. I'll try, but
he says, you don't really understand how it works here.
Yeah. So, isn't that a comment on humanity?
Because then he comes back and he says, well, let me just read you a couple of these telegrams to explain to you how this isn't going to work. And one person says, well, if the Russians are there, I'm not sure. You know, I'll only go if it's in Russia. Well, I'll only go if it's in the U.S. And so, you can see right there that there's going to be a problem. And he's like, well, you better figure something out because I have to talk to everyone and it's super important.
Right.
And the general's like, and he says, maybe if I could go around and walk among the people. He's looking out the window and he says, I'd really like to get to know the people and get a feel for things. He's like, oh, no, I don't think so. And that's when he, you know, turns the lock. And then Klaatu's like, that's right. You turn that lock. And, of course, later he's disappeared.
Right. And in the meantime, Gort, this large robot, is just standing next to the spaceship, not moving at all, just standing.
Well, yeah, because when Klaatu was shot, Gort comes out, and this was a great effect even now. His little visor opens up, and this beam goes back and forth, and the weapons the tanks, and the weapons were all vaporized because there'd been violence done on the guy who'd been shot, so that wasn't going to stand.
And then the guy who was shot, Klaatu, says some words that we don't understand, and then Gort just stands still and his visor closes. And he hasn't moved from that position since, as far as we're telling it here. So then the space guy, Klaatu, goes out into Washington, D.C., and the public is starting to get panicky because all the news reports talk about the spaceman who's loose and the army's zipping around town in Jeeps looking for him. And he shows up at a boarding house and, you know, all in dark shadow and, you know, people sitting there listening to the radio, you know, all like, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. And he walks in. He could be anywhere. And, ooh, a stranger. Who could you be?
And he's all in darkness. Yep. It's so effective.
It is. And then they click on the light and he goes, hey, you got a room?
Yeah, they're, oh, you're just a normal looking man. Okay.
You bet. So to give him room, his name is Mr. Carpenter, which is significant. That was
the clothing he took from the dry cleaner or wherever.
Right, right.
Mr. Carpenter. Major Carpenter, but yeah. He's Mr. Carpenter, right?
Exactly, exactly. And then while he's there, he befriends Patricia Neal, which is the actress we talked about. She is a widow. Her husband died in World War II, and she's got a young boy named Bobby. And, you know, this is funny. It was a difference, you know, in 1950 and now she leaves the boy with the stranger.
I know what you're going to say. Yeah. They've known him 5 minutes.
Hey, I would take him out tomorrow. And she says, sure, that would be nifty.
Even before that, her mm-hmm. boyfriend shows up and he's like, hey, let's go. And she's like, oh, I don't have anyone to leave Bobby with. And, mm-hmm. you know, the carpenter, Klaatu, walks up and says, well, I don't mind. And she's like, oh, you don't? Well, you did just walk in 5 minutes ago. Okay, bye. You're just like, oh,
and right. I described her as so smart just, you know, minutes ago. But
well, I think that, yeah but for the time, that's mm-hmm. how trusting you could be, and it would be all right. Yeah,
right, right.
Which would be kind of nice.
It would be. Dang it. Yep. Yeah. Yep, we're not going the right direction, are we?
No, not with that. No.
Mm-mm. Yep. So Klaatu spends the day alone with the boy out on the town. And they go and they visit the flying saucer where nobody recognizes him. And look at some monuments. And they end up at the Lincoln Monument in kind of a neat scene where he's looking mm-hmm. at the words. And he goes, holy cow, there's a smart guy or a great man. I would like to meet somebody like him. Who's the greatest man in America? Or and Bobby says, well, geez, I'm not sure what you mean by great. Do you mean, you know, maybe this scientist, you know, and he says, well, he ended up saying something like, would the smartest man in the world be okay? And he says, yeah, that'll do just fine. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of an interesting connection between
greatest.
You know, yeah. Collecting greatest with the smartest scientist. And then they decide to go meet this Professor Barnhart, who's clearly a Alfred Einstein character.
He's great.
Down to the hair. And yeah, I do like him too. Yeah. So that was kind of a neat scene when they go to his house, but the professor isn't home, but he's got a blackboard filled with numbers. And
I love that scene.
Klaatu goes in there and writes an equation.
He gets that smile on his face again.
Yeah,
that kind of smile, Michael Rene was sure, you know, like, oh, these people.
One of the extras in a DVD set that I had said that Spencer Tracy read the script, and Spencer Tracy said, I want to do this movie.
Really?
And then they told the director or the cast, I'm pretty sure it was the director, who said, we can't have Spencer Tracy be that role. Mm-hmm. Because when the ship lands and Spencer Tracy comes out, I mean, we're going to lose all credibility.
Yeah, everyone's going to go, oh, it's him.
It's Spencer Tracy. Yeah, he said, we need somebody who people don't know. And they found this guy in London, I guess.
Okay.
Doing some play.
So, anyway,
that was on an extra that I watched. Okay, so he sees Professor Barnhart, and then he leaves an equation, and then he leaves. And so they go back to the boarding house. But anyway, eventually Barnhart and him get to meet each other, and he basically says, he being Klaatu, that, hey, I've got a message that I need to get to everybody. How can we do this? And Barnhart says, well, I've got a meeting of all these scientists. How would that be? And he said, that would do fine. So now this professor is going to bring together scientists from all over the world for Klaatu to talk to.
And he says, could you do something so it will kind of prove to everybody that they should pay attention.
Yes.
The right. scientist says, and mm-hmm. he says something that's dramatic. And he goes, okay. Mm-hmm. And he says, but we don't want to hurt anyone. And he says, all right, I have something. He goes, he starts putting all these conditions. No one could be hurt, but it has to really impress them. And he goes, okay, dramatic, but not dangerous. Oh, an interesting challenge, says Klaatu. And he starts thinking about it. And then he starts getting, then he goes away and he's very mysterious. He's, you know, sneaking around, doing all these things.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Bobby follows him.
Yep.
Sees him going to his ship.
Yeah. Which is guarded by one guy.
You got this robot standing out there, and they've been mm-hmm. trying things like jackhammers, welding, everything they can. They can't get into the ship or mm-hmm. the robot.
Yep.
And so they leave a guy with a gun. Lieutenant, private, off. Get out there and patrol.
That was something
I guess there were a couple of them because Gort banged their heads together upon command from some light flashes from a flashlight.
And then, that's right.
Yeah.
Two guys.
And so then, I have to say, the interior of that spaceship, A number one still, I think. I don't know who did that, but wasn't it great?
Yeah, it was neat. It was neat.
It still worked,
I
thought.
Yeah, of course it did. I thought it did too.
Yep. And then they just kind of move their hands in these little circles. They wouldn't even talk.
Mm-hmm. Doing the little Minority Report action on the stuff.
Oh, see, I haven't seen that.
Oh, it's a good movie. Yep.
Well, and I hear that, but you know, I started to watch it one time, and it had all these pictures of scissors and pictures of people's eyes at the very beginning. And I was like, I don't know what's happening, but I want to watch.
That's not the kind of movie it is, but.
I know, but I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. And Rose and I were watching it, and we were both like, whoa. Wait, and she watched it later, and she goes, you know, that's really not anything. And I was like, maybe I'll watch it sometime. But I still always remember those scissors and those eyes. And
that would be an interesting one for us to talk about someday, because it's a Philip K. Dick story in which they capture people before they're going to commit a murder.
Right. Yeah. And then Tom Cruise's character is accused falsely.
Leaps into action.
He thinks... But he can't tell because it hasn't happened yet.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
Well, I know it's supposed to be good. We should talk about it.
Yep.
The Thought Police on patrol.
Exactly.
Well, so basically,
what does he do that's dramatic at noon exactly?
Do I get to answer?
You bet.
All the electricity around the world goes off.
Exactly.
Except for hospitals or planes that are flying or anything like that would hurt somebody. So,
we're talking about farmers and their tractors not working and milking cows and can't do it anymore. All the cars stop on the road.
I know. They showed around the world, every kind of in the country and in the city situation. And
wow, wouldn't that be something?
I know. I really loved it.
And then there's a whole bunch of, let's talk about that a little bit. I was just going to say there's a whole bunch of other stories that have kind of taken the same tack, and it'd be interesting to see if this was the first one, but I don't think it was.
Turning the electricity
having an alien presence come down and say, you guys need to stop doing this, and here's what could happen if you don't. You know, that kind of powerful thing.
Yeah.
So... anyway, so he does that, and it lasts for a half an hour, and then everything starts up and goes back to normal, and everybody starts driving.
The scientist loved it. Yeah, he was the scientists are so elegant. Ooh,
so nice. In the meantime, all the army is still looking for Klaatu. They're falling over themselves looking, and Bobby has spilled the beans to his mom and her boyfriend. And her boyfriend.
Right, because he is a good boy, and he's a good 1951 boy, and he's so classic. It's like somebody took Leave It to Beaver and put him in that movie. It's like, hey, Mom, what about this? That doesn't seem right, does it? You know?
Look at these diamonds in my pocket. He gave me these.
He's so earnest and sweet, little boy.
He really is. And, okay, so what happens from there is...
And the boyfriend's a huge jerk, because when he finds this out, he goes, hey, it's my chance to be a big man and impress you, honey, so you'll finally marry me and everyone else. And he's gonna turn in Klaatu, because he's gone around and looked at those diamonds, and they're like, nothing on earth say all the jewelers at the three places he went. So he's ready to turn them in. And Patricia Neal's like, oh my gosh. Well, while we were looking at all the electricity not working and you guys couldn't see, Klaatu told me what was going on. You guys just have to keep wondering. And I have to say, the suspense is there. If you haven't seen it, you're wondering, what the heck does he want? And so she goes running into the boyfriend. She goes, oh no, he knows about it. And she's like, don't make that call. And he's like, what? No, now I'm going to be a big man. And she's like, oh, you're not a big man. Well, not in words like that, but you get the point.
Yep, exactly. Exactly. Yeah,
so
right.
He's going to go ahead and do it. And I thought it was interesting because there was no direct confrontation other than this verbal, don't do that, I'm going to anyway. Mm-hmm. She doesn't try to take the phone away. She doesn't push down on the little receiver to make it turn off, which I wouldn't you just do that?
Yeah, probably so.
But she just,
but instead she's
just
like, I'm going to go.
Very well then.
Yep, very well then. I'm going to go do what I can. Exactly.
Yeah, I'll just go handle things.
Yeah.
Theremin's in the background. I have to say, also, when this started, Tom's like, oh, Bernard Herrmann. And I went, OMG. So good.
Oh, yeah.
And the score is fantastic. And so you've got the classic science fiction theremin use. But you've also, there were other scenes where it sounded like it was just regular orchestration, but what you'd notice is there'd be the music and then this little beat and music and a beat, and the beat was always this little, just a note off the theremin. It was really, really beautifully done. It gave it just a tiny bit of otherworldliness without being all over the top, which some of the music was. I mean, you got a saucer landing, you're gonna have a lot of theremin going on there. It's very otherworldly. But it was just, it was wonderful. I loved it.
Yeah, so, you know, when I first heard the word theremin?
Where?
Tamahome.
Oh.
I'm serious.
He knows everything.
He does. He knows everything, and it's awesome.
It's a good thing he uses a pseudonym, or they'd have to, like, you know, take him away and lock him up because he knows too much.
That's right. I wonder if he's landed. Tam, please don't turn off the electricity.
I know. He's probably going 4,000 miles an hour just listening from outside the Earth's atmosphere.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That's very cool.
Especially if he gets to be in a ship like Klaatu. That was a pretty cool ship.
It was. It was way good.
Yeah.
So the army finally catches up with this guy, Klaatu.
Oh,
and
yes.
What do you think they do to this poor dude?
Because we're stupid and carrying people. We shoot the heck out of him.
Yep, he's down. But right before, as they're running away, he's with Patricia Neal, and he says, hey, if these guys take me down, I need you to go to Gort and say, Klaatu Barata Nikto. And that'll keep him from destroying the Earth.
I know. I thought it was interesting that he was trying to run away, and she goes, well, I think it'll be all right or something. And he goes, I'm not worried about me. I'm worried about what Gort might do. If I'm not around to stop him. And I'm like, how thoughtful of you. I appreciate that's very considerate,
that
you know?
Is, yeah.
I appreciate that. You know, very so cool. I just felt like he was just such a stand up guy in every way. So anyway.
So yeah, so he's down.
She goes running off.
Yeah, she goes running off. He's been shot. So as everybody crowds around him, she sneaks off to go see Gort. And Gort has been busy. He suddenly he's woke up because his master's dead. So somehow there's a connection there.
Right. He was encased in this super plastic, that super new plastic that he can't get out of. And I'm like, did you see him?
Exactly.
Dissolve the tank right in front of you with people on it and everything.
So the plastic wasn't very. Yeah.
He just melted it like a ice cube.
Exactly. Yep. So, and then there's the classic 1950s science fiction little scene where she's like, and he's coming at her. But instead of screaming and not being able to do anything, she says, hey, Klaatu Barata Nikto, buddy.
Yeah.
And
she was terrified, but she got it out.
She did. She did it.
And when he picked her up, she did not faint. I was very proud of her.
Me too.
What an American
woman. It was kind of cool to see. So
yeah.
So she says that, and he closes his visor, which he was about to shoot her with, apparently.
And he dissolved a couple of people.
He did.
At least already. He was ready to go.
He was. And he picks her up and brings her into the spaceship and puts her down and starts doing the hand wavy stuff all over. And Then he walks out of the ship and goes to the where they're keeping the body of this dead Klaatu.
Yeah,
shoots a hole in the building. Yeah. And then walks all the way back. And that was a little unbelievable that, you know, how did he not draw a crowd, you know, on his way back, wherever this guy was being kept?
Wouldn't they have had a few guards out there? And then they're like, you know.
You would have
like,
thought they would have said, holy cow.
Go look at the robot and see what's going on with him. Yeah, he's fine. We got a guard on him.
Yep. All the army was busy chasing this guy, I guess.
They were.
So, so he picks his Klaatu up and he brings him back to the ship and puts him on this slat and does some hand waving him again on the controls. And all of a sudden this guy wakes up,
starts breathing.
Yep.
Wakes up
and says, hi, Patricia Neal. I'm not quite okay, but, and that was an interesting thing, wasn't it? What he said right there.
She said,
Gosh, what did she say?
She says, but I thought you were like gone
or
something.
And he says, no, I'm drawing a blank on what exactly he said.
I know. Cause it's like, well, no, we can be brought back for a while or something like that. This will revive us.
And she said,
how long
will you be alive? Yeah. He said, it's only temporary. That's right.
Yeah.
And she said, how long are you going to be alive? And he says, only the Great Spirit knows that or something like that.
Yeah. Only the Almighty Spirit knows that.
Right.
And you're just like, whoa, what did you just say? Excellent.
Yeah. Thumbs up.
And it was kind of ironic because it's only temporary.
Mm-hmm.
And so is our life.
And so is our life, right.
I was like, oh, snap at me, you know?
You bet.
Yeah, and that's a thing. I think I sent you something, and it was from Wikipedia. So I'm going to just assume it was right because this is a super popular movie, and I think somebody would have corrected it if it wasn't.
Sure.
But basically, the movie censors of the time – and this is very different than it would be now. We're upset because they thought the robot was too all-powerful. It had no limits on it, and they didn't like that. And wasn't that the point? And so and bringing him back to life and everything, that was showing way too much power. And so they wanted the scriptwriter to fix it so that it showed that they weren't all-powerful. And so he put that line in.
Yeah.
And they had said something like, well, you know, because you've got that whole Christ theme going on. He's like, oh, I thought that was more subliminal. But since you guys caught it, I'll just go
and that was the writer. And an extra that I watched on this DVD, you know, the writer, they talked to the writer.
Oh, they did.
And he said, yeah, he did that. And he was hoping it would be more subliminal. And he implied that the director and them didn't really – see that until it was pretty much in editing phase.
Oh, maybe so then.
Yeah. So they were like, oh, look at this. Look what we've done.
Well, I have to say, when we first saw it, we didn't really catch that at all until Tom afterwards. He's like the best movie watcher to be with ever because he immediately then starts just looking up on IMDb and Wikipedia all the interesting information.
Oh, that's cool.
And he was reading me all this stuff, and I was like, holy moly, I never caught it, but it works. You know, Carpenter or the clothes he takes.
Yep.
He's resurrected. And
and the author was, or the writer of the script, his last name was North. Edmund H. North is what I'm showing here. And he said, yep, all that was intentional.
Well, and so. And as it turns out, but what I can't remember if we found it out then or no, I guess it's later, you find out that what he wants is peace.
Exactly. And that's an interesting thing. So now he's been resurrected from the dead, right?
Right.
And the scientists all show up. You still don't know where the army went, but the scientists all show up at the UFO site.
Oh, well, the army's showing up, too, and they're going, well, you can't have your meeting now because the robot's on the loose. We don't know where he is. They don't realize he's back at the ship.
Yep.
And they were supposed to all meet at the ship for the scientists. And they're like, oh.
Okay.
So,
and then,
so crazy.
And then they walk out. Klaatu comes out with Gort. Or Gort comes out first, and then he says, yeah.
More dramatic effect.
Be careful. Don't shoot anybody anymore.
Yeah.
Oh, it would have been comedy at that point if they just shot him.
And Patricia Neal's out there. She's gone down to be next
she,
to
the she walks
main
right
scientist.
Out, and the scientists are like, what the heck? And anyway, he basically says, if you guys want to be part of the interstellar community, you need to get your act together because we will not tolerate aggression. And we created these robots behind us to police ourselves from doing the same thing. And you guys are going to be eliminated if you pose any threat to us whatsoever.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much the speech he gave, and off they flew.
We don't care about your little petty squabbles. I think he said that two or three times. So, and kind of scornfully, like, if you want to kill each other, that's not my affair. But you just stay away from us, because now that you've got atomic power,
you've got atomic power,
you could go
rockets.
To the stars, and we're not having any of this.
And we're not going to stand for it.
We have peace. We don't have to worry about that. And he's kind of made that clear to Bobby at some point, because when they went to see Bobby's father's grave, and he said, well, we don't have any wars where I come from. And Bobby goes, oh, that's a neat idea. You know, I like that.
That is a neat idea.
Well, what do you do? And he's, you know, something like, oh, we can, you know, it's the Star Trek ideal, or anybody's ideal, I guess. If we can better ourselves and have research and write books and do whatever it is we do. Explore.
So cool. So that's pretty much the movie. And, yeah, I selected it just because it was fun. You know, I wasn't even thinking of the Jesus connection when I picked it. More of the peace thing is what I remembered, and the desire for peace, and how we seem to completely screw that up constantly as a race. One of the recurring themes in science fiction is, in fact, I just saw something today. I came home for lunch and I'm watching, it was an astronomy show on the History Channel, I think. And they were talking about other worlds that they found and how many planets there are out there. And they found hundreds of planets outside our solar system now. And then they brought up the Drake equation, which is basically a big long equation that says if there are this many stars like the sun, and this percentage of them have planets, and this percentage of those have planets in a zone where water will be liquid, and in this percentage of that, et cetera, et cetera. And it's a big long equation that's supposed to give you a number of how many potential civilizations there are out there. And when you plug numbers in there, as you know, nobody knows what the values of these numbers really would be, but you always come up with a bigger number, you know, a big number of possibilities. And one of those numbers is what is the lifespan of a civilization? One of the reasons why maybe we have not seen another civilization is that they always destroy themselves.
Well, let me just give you another reason, maybe.
You bet.
But I will say this about that. If you've got a long equation and all the numbers you're putting into it are guesses, that equation means nothing.
It does. It's just a thought experiment.
I know. And I don't mind a thought experiment, but what I mind is when people act like it's real. And that happens.
Sure.
I don't mean to speak to you in that severe tone. I'm speaking to some other people who I might talk to in that tone. But I read this great book called Seven Glorious Days. Something like A Scientist Retells the Creation Story or something like that. And it's basically by a guy who started off, he grew up fundamentalist. He went off to college like, I am going to show these scientists how things really work, because he was very literal understanding of the Bible that he had. And he came out of school 4 years later, you know, not believing in God, but understood science really well. So it kind of had gone, the conversion had gone the other way. But at some point he found his way back to faith, and he didn't really go into that very much. But he just basically said what bothered him is the thing that bothers a lot of thinking Christians or thinking scientists or believing scientists a lot, is that people think that you can only have faith and you can only have science, and that they don't really go together. And so in an attempt to kind of help Christians see how you can believe in the things that have been discovered about science, and it also works into the way God would have done things, and it would have been told possibly in the faith telling, the salvation history of, you know, Genesis and the Bible, that he kind of takes it and he does this really marvelous overview for somebody like me anyway, who doesn't understand a lot of the science, and says, okay, we don't know what happened precisely at the Big Bang, but from all our measurements, we know a lot of what happened right afterwards. Mm-hmm. So we know the kinds of molecules there were, we know all these things. And so what he does is he kind of very broad terms for somebody like me, again, takes you through all that stuff. And he kind of posits it, and I don't have the book. I lent it to somebody who wanted to give it to a teacher of hers who's struggling with this very issue. But he basically say, on the first day, matter was created that would work into the plan of, you know, creation that would bring life, and God saw that it was good. And then he talks about the Big Bang and what happened. And then he'd say, and in the second epoch, this happened. So he's basically taking that idea of seven steps, if this makes sense, mm-hmm. Yeah. And kind of working it out. And so as he works it out, he's going, okay, so by the time he gets down to, and then there was our galaxy, and then there was our little sun, and then the planet. And he goes, so let's look at these numbers. They're huge numbers. He goes, but if you look at them in order from the Big Bang, when they happened, he goes, now that we understand all the necessary scientific reactions of molecules and chemicals and physics and all that stuff that had to happen to get our planet, he goes, what we can see is it happened practically as soon as it could possibly happen. It didn't take a long time, really, in astronomical terms. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, that's interesting. He goes, well, now let's look at it. And one of these, you know, and then this happened and it was good kind of things was, now let's look at the Earth. How long did it take for it to be so that life could evolve? So he goes through all these things that it has to cool down, water, you know, all these things. And he goes, now, so let's look at this. He goes, pretty much when you look at it, and I'm greatly simplifying it, so don't, anybody listening, don't just roll your eyes. You'd have to look at the book. But he goes, pretty much what we can see is all the processes that had to happen for life to evolve happened as soon as they possibly could. He goes, when you look at it from the point of view of believing all this science had to happen this way in order to get here and to evolve and everything else, and that would be, we would say, God's plan, that's fine. He goes, it didn't take one extra second. Everything happened as if it was directed towards this.
Yeah, that's fascinating.
And so when he said that, and he's talking about this, and he goes, so in that sense, he goes, based on where we are and all these other things, he goes, and water and everything else, he goes, we could very well be, instead of being other civilizations in front of us, we could be one of the older civilizations.
Definitely possible.
And I suddenly, that flipped my mind, because I thought, I never thought of us being an elder civilization. You know, in the books, like, what is it, the Isaac Asimov Foundation trilogy?
Yeah, yeah.
There's always been all these other civilizations that, you know, have left things that people can't duplicate, but they'll use, like, the great glass or whatever from the spaceships. Mm-hmm. And I thought, wow, wouldn't that be weird if the reason we're not really finding anyone around us is because we're one of the first ones to pop up?
That's an interesting thought, for sure.
Isn't it?
It is, yeah.
And like I say, I know I made this book sound very simplistic and super religious because that's the point of view I'm just kind of presenting it from at just right here. It's not that way. It's really not written that way. I really, if that person doesn't give the book back, and that's okay, I don't mind. but then I'm going to have to get myself a copy because I'd like to read it again.
Oh, cool.
I really liked it.
Sounds good. Okay.
So,
yeah.
Anyway, I took us way off course with that.
No, and that's fine. But yeah, it's just a fascinating to think about all this stuff for me. It's one of the reasons why I like science fiction so much.
Yeah.
I recall, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I recall a book that I read, by Orson Scott Card called The Memory of Earth. And that book is interesting for a couple of reasons, but the main thing is he posited a place where human beings were put. You know, we never did get rid of the will to fight. Mm-hmm. So this colony on this new planet had satellites that were going around, tons of satellites. that were basically thought controllers. So if you had a thought and a violent thought, it would make you forget that you had that thought, these satellites. And of course, the story begins when the satellites start to fail.
And
it really is a good book. But what's another interesting aspect about that particular book is that it's based, I don't know if based on is the right word, but one of the books of the Book of Mormon called Nephi, the main character in the book is Nephi, N-A-F-A-I. So it's like he took the Book of Mormon, this Book of Nephi and the Book of Mormon, and structured a science fiction story out of it.
Okay.
Kind of interesting. I didn't know that when I read it. And then after I read it, I thought, oh, that's interesting. So,
well, it's kind of like, you know, when we were talking about Tolkien, where you could see parts of Beowulf in The Hobbit.
Sure, sure.
Where, you know, that's influencing you because it's a great idea or, you know, interesting story.
Exactly.
Well,
right.
Well, that kind of brings me back to something that I thought of right before we started talking, which was, I was reading some review book that's Introduction to Catholicism for Adults. So I'm reading over it, and it's going through, you know, the various things that it talks about. And one of them was the problem of evil, because that's always something that gets brought up naturally. It's very troubling anyway. And why are we violent? Why are we mean to each other? And it's something that gets brought up a lot in terms of an objection to Christianity or Catholicism. But what it made me think about is, of course, the ideal way is to have peace. And in this movie, it's forced on you. You have one choice.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you have two choices. You can do it our way, or you can be obliterated, because we will destroy the earth. It will be, you'll all be exterminated, and the earth will be just done away with. So that's, But we don't care about your petty little problems. You can continue to fight each other. So to me, what that does is just set up this whole situation where people are going to be incredibly frustrated.
Mm-hmm.
We know all this stuff is out there, and we can't even get out there because we'll die, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of, to me, I'm like, because we're not God and because we don't have the answer or even a good answer, that's man's answer. Okay.
Yeah.
Do it this way or not at all. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
Let's make some rules.
It's interesting, though, as you're describing that to me, you know, feel free to jump all over me here.
Mm-hmm.
But how does that differ from the Christian message itself? You know, God tells us to be a certain way, or, you know, we're going to go to one of two places, right?
Well, but see, here's the difference. I thought, now I didn't think about that, but you're choosing which place you're going to go to, for one thing.
Mm-hmm.
But God's way, it's a riskier way, but it's also, to me, infinitely more creative, because he gives us free will. He depends on us to change internally and to become a better person. And he'll help you.
Right.
If you're willing.
So that's kind of,
and you'll keep trying.
So the main difference there is that's on a personal level,
right?
But and on in this film, he's talking to humanity as a whole. You know, how do you get humanity as a whole to move in the right direction?
Right.
It's extremely difficult.
Well, and it's kind of interesting too, because that makes me think of one of the marches for life, and we actually went to the mass before the march, and Bishop Farrell here in Dallas was saying, the fact is, he goes, we want the Roe versus Wade to be turned back. He goes, but let's face the real fact. The real fact is not in having the law. The problem is not in having the law. The problem is inside our own hearts. Because if there was internal change and conversion and an understanding of what's being done, he goes, the law wouldn't matter. It wouldn't be needed. No one would ever go have an abortion if we were able to explain it properly. He says, we're not reaching people on a personal level. That's the problem.
Mm.
And that's that idea of, you have to be, you know, when Christ said, you're the light, you're the city on a hill, you're the yeast that's worked through the bread that makes the bread rise instead of be flat. that's the difference that personal interaction makes, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's the difference that us being holy makes. Because I was just reading this other thing. It's really great. Mike Aquilina and, somebody like Chris Stubna, if that's how you say his name, wrote it. It's called Take Five Meditations with Pope Benedict, and it's designed for business people. It's just 5 minutes long. You can read it at lunch, at work, or whatever. And it's a little quote from Pope Benedict, and then they've got a couple of little questions to reflect on, usually oriented to how you're doing during the day. So anybody can read it. You don't have to be a business person, but it's kind of oriented to, here I am out in the world with all these people. Am I thinking of this or that? And they were talking about that problem of how are you affecting people? The reason we're supposed to be holy, says the Pope, is that our holiness helps change the world. It's not just good for us. It's good for everyone because it's infectious. You know, people think of holiness as being, well, you're holier than now and very serious and everything, but really it's a joyful, happy thing because you're fully yourself, you know?
Yeah.
And if we're really that way, or when we can be that way, you know, it's people want to be around that. That's why people loved John Paul II.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was cheerful and interested in everything. And I don't know, does this make sense?
Oh, of course it does. Yeah. Yeah.
And so that's God's way. God's way is if we can do it ourselves, because not only does he want it to be good for everyone, he wants us personally to be happy. And just having those rules imposed on you isn't going to make you happy. It hopefully help protect people.
Mm-hmm.
But wouldn't it be better to change the people? Like, that's the whole point of Catholics not wanting the death penalty. The idea is it gives you the chance to change. It gives you the chance to have a personal meeting with God that can change your whole life and make you free even when you're in prison. Help you change other people even in there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and so what man doesn't know how to do that, unless he's got God's help from a Catholic point of view. You know what I'm saying?
Yep, yep.
So that's the freedom that stops all this other bad behavior. Now, we're not very good at it, but the people who keep trying, you know, we all know people who, oh, they're a saint, and people are attracted to them, and, you know, you don't want to disappoint them.
Mm-hmm.
They could be friends or whoever, and that's that effect.
Sure, yeah. Yep, I agree.
So not only in our own lives, but then we have to get out there and go, now what are we doing, like, I don't know, extra?
Mm-hmm.
Whether, like, going to talk to people in a nursing home who don't have anyone to visit, or, I don't know.
Yeah, whatever
it could kitchen.
Be. Mm-hmm. Yep. Teaching your retreats.
Right.
Yep.
Confirmation classes.
Confirmation classes.
Right. Yep. I mean, we've all got some place that we could say no to if we're asked.
Right. Yep.
But we could say yes and help make a difference.
Exactly. Yeah.
And then the great thing is it helps you too.
You bet.
Yeah. You know? Did I just do a sermon? I didn't mean to do that.
It's all right.
I was just thinking out loud.
It was interesting that, you know, there's a parallel there, but it's not quite a parallel, and you pointed that out perfectly, so that's great.
Well, it kept bothering me that he was like, I'm imposing this on you. You don't have a choice because you can't be trusted to do it yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And I could see the point. I couldn't argue with it, and so that's when I started thinking about it. And it's funny because from what I can understand, I haven't seen the new version of it that Keanu Reeves did,
mm-hmm.
but I went and read about it on Wikipedia, and so from what I understand there, they've added a lot of backstory or subplot or something, but the basic thing that Klaatu is coming to tell everyone is, you're messing up the earth, and if you don't stop messing up the earth, we're going to kill all you people. And I was like,
we're messing
whoa.
Up the planet. You know, I saw that movie years ago. I don't even know when it came out, but I completely don't remember anything about it. Isn't that weird?
Wow.
I mean,
that's terrible.
I don't even know what to say.
What an indictment. Just like,
I think that is an indictment because it was almost as if I shut it off mentally because I thought this version was so much better. It's just one of those things, you know, why remake stuff like this? I just don't understand it. Out of all that stuff that's out there, I mean, science fiction especially, I mean, they haven't even scratched the surface of what's available in short fiction that you could make movies out of.
Well, and
they're remaking, one of the best science fiction movies ever made. It just doesn't make any sense to me at all.
Well, and that remake of The War of the Worlds, which I did not see, but and it's not that I love the old War of the Worlds that much, but it was fairly close to the book as far as I can remember for being moved to America and all that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And then I read about what they did in the new one, the new-ish one.
The one with
Tom Cruise.
Tom Cruise, yeah, I've seen it. Yeah.
Okay, and wasn't it really different in a lot of ways?
Yeah, I mean, sure it was.
Same thing?
It had the same structure, basically. But it was a movie about Tom Cruise and his kids and survival. I mean, it's almost like they created this threat to the world for them to tell a story in. That's how I would describe that. And then, but you know, this stuff is there, but it's only the structure in which they could do something. You know what I mean?
Instead of looking at the actual problem that...
Yeah, because Tom Cruise was not, his character was in no way able to make a difference at all. You know, it's not like he was able to figure something out or, you know, I hope I'm remembering this right, but he was like a longshoreman or something like that was his job, if I remember right. And he was divorced and had two kids, and the two kids were with him when the event happened where they started to come out of the ground, and then it was them running and surviving. It became kind of a mini The Stand kind of a thing where they're they're just surviving in a world that's been destroyed.
Yeah,
you know, and then you know there was some tense scenes where you've got, you know, one-on-one type stuff where he's having to fight a specific thing, but then it just all, you know, they all die or something like that, if I remember right.
Yeah.
So, but not through, well, even in the book, it wasn't through any action of the characters, but the movie wasn't so much about the problem. It was about survival.
Yeah. Him and his kids. So you were tugging at your heartstrings.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, and I think about this Keanu Reeves one, and I was like, wow, doesn't this show how differently we think about a lot of stuff now where they felt a whole movie was justified in being made because it's better to wipe out the people than have the earth be,
stunning, you know, because I guess what they have in common is that this version of The Day the Earth Stood Still is very much a 1951 movie, a statement about that world at that time.
Right.
You know, saying, can't we get it together, people? Can't we survive as a race? Because everybody was wondering, can we?
Can't we all just get along?
Can't we just, you know, not blow ourselves up? You know, and here we are.
Yeah.
How many years later we've got, you know, nuclear weapons enough on this planet to destroy it how many times over? You know, we could never use that many weapons as we've got now.
And of course,
We've
got terrorists now.
And we've got terrorists now that, God forbid, someday
many other awful things.
You know, that's just terrible to even think about. You know, but it seems like it's worse now. So I don't know. And then they're talking about the planet, but
I know, like, you couldn't have found some other cause really wanted to fix. I mean, you know,
I'm trying to think of what other movie.
It's not that I don't love the planet. Don't get me wrong, people.
Yeah.
Love Mother Earth plenty.
Yep.
And all the little birds and animals and my two dogs and everything, and I recycle and everything. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
People are more important than some other stuff. And to have a whole movie be about, you know, well, I'm going to wipe you all out if you don't treat the earth better.
Yeah.
I could be simplifying, but I might not be.
Yeah, that's funny. Yeah, so the original story was interesting too. It has a couple of twists in it. But that story is called Farewell to the Master by Harry Bates. It opens with the ship landed a while back, and Klaatu was shot immediately a while back.
That never changes.
By a crazy. You know, they just, right. Humanity is very, you know, very apologetic. And Gort, who's called Gnut for some reason in the story. I don't know why they would have changed it, but it's G-N-U-T.
Oh, okay.
Is just standing there. And it's been so long in the past that they've built a wing of the Smithsonian out over it. So people can come visit.
That.
So yeah. This guy is a photographer and he's taking pictures of it. You know, they're studying the heck out of it. And they're taking tour groups in there and saying, hey, check out this robot from space.
I love that. Right?
And it actually wasn't even from space. The whole thing appeared just one day. It didn't fly and land. It just appeared from another dimension or something. So anyway, he's comparing two photographs in his room, and he realizes that foot had moved. He's like, holy cow, something's going on here. So he ends up going into this building and waiting kind of overnight and staying in there. And sure enough, the robot moves around at night.
And tricky stuff.
And yeah, there's a couple of twists. I'm going to go ahead and tell the whole story because I think it's neat. If you want to read the story yourself, you know, by all means, go ahead and don't listen to me. But what happens is, you know, the robot just acts strangely. Like a gorilla comes out of the ship and Gnut comes out of the ship and wrestles with this gorilla and drags it back into the ship and closes the door. Things like that happen at night. This is what's going on at night. And then one night he takes the gorilla and the gorilla has died and he just places it outside the ship. And then he takes a person who is the person who recorded the announcements in the PA system, who's also dead, and puts him next to him. So he's got like these dead bodies now, kind of this little line of dead bodies. And you're thinking, what the heck is going on?
Uh-huh.
And anyway, you know, one thing leads to another. He ends up in the ship himself, and Klaatu is in there and wakes up because Klaatu, you know, was dead.
Right.
And he's like, holy cow, you know, how did you even get here? You know, you were over there. And he said that Gnut had figured out how to resurrect him by reverse engineering him from the sound of his voice.
Whoa.
Yeah, whoa. Which is why he had the body of the guy that did the PA system. The guy who did the PA system is fine. It's just that he reverse engineered from the sound of his voice his entire body.
Okay. Isn't it? Yeah,
kind of a weird idea. Anyway, then Klaatu gets to come out and give a speech to the people, you know.
I like that the interstellar community is patiently waiting for all this to happen the whole time.
Right.
It's been 10 years, but whatever.
Yeah. And then, I'm trying to remember, gosh, but the kicker was that the very last line, the guy, the original photographer said, but wait a minute. I thought, you know, what's going on here? And the robot says, you misunderstand. I am the master.
Oh.
And that's the last line of the story.
Whoa.
Yeah. So.
Wow, they did change that.
They did. So it's like what they did is they took, okay, big robot. And Klaatu was different in there. Big robot, cool. Spaceship, cool. And there was no other characters in it except for the photographer. So everything else was...
That's funny because, that's not really something you could make a movie out of. You would have to kind of just take that
and the fact
concept
that, you know,
and start
in the backstory.
From, yeah, scratch.
In the backstory, they Klaatu had been shot, so they used that.
Yeah.
But that's about
and
it.
And I guess, it was his message that you have to live in peace or something?
Gosh, you know, I'm embarrassed to say that I don't remember.
Sorry, I asked. Never mind. Forget it. Wait, where's that satellite when I need it to make you forget that I even asked the question?
Yeah, so I don't recall it being some huge thing like that. It's funny that I don't remember. I think that I was focused on reverse engineering from his voice. That's weird. And then
what a concept.
And then the whole I'm the master.
How does this work?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, so fascinating. Yeah. Yep. But cool. Well, but anyway, lots of fun.
Well, I'm glad you chose this movie. We watched it I had watched it a really long time ago, mm-hmm. you know, Saturday afternoon at the movies or whatever. And then, sure. and kind of thought, eh. And as is the way so often, you know, with things I saw when I was younger and didn't appreciate them, we watched it 2 or 3 years ago for some reason, just maybe because we hadn't seen it in a long time. Same reason as you. Mm-hmm. I'll watch these movies. And we were blown away by how good it was, how much That's we cool. enjoyed it. So good I was deal. Glad to watch it again.
Yeah, it was fun. I enjoy science fiction is fun. I sure enjoy
it. I love it.
Yep.
I know.
Yep. So many stories.
I do have two other movie recommendations. Great.
Yes.
If this is a good time.
Of course one, it is. You bet.
One, everybody knows they should go see, and we've talked about it in emails, Les Miserables.
Les Miserables, yes.
Yes.
Indeed.
So good.
Oh, yeah. Now, that was the first time you'd seen it?
Yes, it was.
That's really
I've managed
cool.
to avoid Victor Hugo at all costs, every way possible.
Yeah, I mean, I came out of that movie. I'd seen it before, so I was familiar with the story. You know, mm-hmm. we got to see it. The traveling troupe came through Salt Lake one time, and we okay. went down and saw it. And
how fun.
Got the music on my iPod, the original London cast.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went to this one, you know, and I'd seen what Liam Neeson did, a version that wasn't a musical.
Right.
And then just recently on PBS, they had a concert, Les Miserables, the 25th oh. anniversary concert. And it was not the full play. It was just all the music, and they were in costume and everything, but it was really good.
Well, that's the, it started, this I thought was really interesting. It started as a French concept album.
Hmm.
Did you know that?
I didn't know that. I have no idea who wrote it.
Someone read the book, however long ago, 25 years or whenever ago, and they just went back and wrote all the songs.
Wow.
That was it. And so, in fact, Orson Scott Card talks about it in his column from last week.
Oh, cool. I better
because he
that,
really right? liked the movie, really mm-hmm. likes the musical, and he was talking about the strengths and weaknesses or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That was all fine to me because I'd only seen the one thing. And but he was talking about the concept album, which I'd heard of somehow.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that's really the strongest of any of it because that was the original thing. And he said somebody, Stephen Sondheim, heard it and said, it's only got 4 songs in it. And he goes, well, says Orson Scott Card, let's think about that other great French musical, The Umbrellas of Cherbourg. And I don't know that one. He goes, mm-hmm. but that's got 1 song. They sing it over and over. So French, 4 is a huge improvement. And I said, maybe that's why when I see the name of one of the songs of Les Miserables written, that song is in my head.
Yeah.
The tune is in my head. And I've never had that happen from another musical like that so quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's because they used those themes over and over. It was so good,
yeah,
though.
They sure did. Yeah. What a terrific
and
movie.
Hugh
yeah, it
Jackman.
Came out a huge, powerful, geez. I mean,
yeah.
Yep. And the message
and
was great.
You know, if you've got any faith great. At all,
yeah.
you're going to, oh, it's
Yeah,
the
what
movie.
Was that thing? When you help another person, you see the face of God. Or when you love another person, that's what it is.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, and the bishop.
Mm-hmm.
Who kind of kicks it all off. Rose had read the book, mm-hmm. of course. So when we went to see it, she gave us more of his backstory so that his cool. story would be, she said she was worried that, she goes, he wasn't in the Liam Neeson version,
mm-hmm.
or not much. And so she was worried that if he was in this, there wouldn't be much context. So, but there was, he was good.
Cool.
Good. Yeah. The other thing that I saw, which fits in with the science fiction-ish and apocalyptic theme, is Seeking a Friend for the End of the World.
Yes, I saw your review of that today.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's funny because I gave
Steve
it
Carell.
Three and a, yeah, mm-hmm. Steve Carell. Finally, there's a movie where I can go, except for these embarrassing scenes, you'll love the movie. This
you know,
it
laugh.
Had a few weak spots, but they weren't, you know, like some of the things like Date Night, where you're like,
yeah, what was a movie that he was in where one of his kids yelled, you are a murderer of love.
I don't remember.
You don't remember that one?
No. Oh,
she was a teenage girl, a middle school girl. Dan in Real Life.
I did see that.
Oh,
and that's
I love that movie.
One that I pretty much forgot a lot
really?
Of because I was like, mm-hmm. well, I've seen this movie.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen this movie a lot of times.
Yeah.
So what about this movie is going to be different? Mm-hmm. And I liked Steve Carell and I liked the actress who was his interest. But, you know, I didn't find it to be that unusual from a lot of those other little movies, like with a similar plot. So mm-hmm. I forgot a lot of it, but he was good in it. Mm-hmm. I guess that one didn't have really embarrassing parts, but I just didn't feel like it was strong enough as a movie.
Okay. Yeah, I loved it. I thought it was terrific.
Oh, well, I'm sorry. Never mind.
Don't be great. Don't be sorry. That's fine. I loved it. Yeah.
But this I really liked because for a lot of reasons, and you can read my review. We could put a link to it. But the main thing, because it did have weak spots, but it was that it is a movie that's about the apocalypse. And they don't cop out. But you got to have, you know, guts to make a romantic comedy about the end of the world. And they did, and it was good.
Not, Simon Pegg is not involved with this at all?
Yeah, I know. Well, that's coming up, I'm sure.
Oh, I can't soon. Wait to see that.
But the thing is that what it did is I was really kind of thrown into this mental, I don't want to say funk, but I was suddenly very serious for 2 or 3 days thinking about that because it was like, this is the end of everything. Mm-hmm. What do you do? And that's when, as a Catholic, I suddenly started going, you know, I really should be better prepared. We're supposed to not think about it all the time, but you're kind of supposed to always kind of go, well, you know, if I get hit by a truck, you know, life is not certain, but you kind of think it'll go on for a really, really long time. You're not planning on it ending. And so that scenario that was presented of no one's got a way out, it kind of made me really dwell on last things for a while. Death, judgment, heaven, hell.
Sure. Sure.
Not in a bad way, just, you know, it took me by surprise.
Yep.
Yeah. So.
Well, cool. Okay.
Yeah, I liked it.
Yep. And I just looked up the Three Flavors Cornetto trilogy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Shaun of the Dead, which we've done here, and Hot Fuzz.
Which I love.
And The World's End is coming out this year. It says here that in the UK it comes out on 14 August, and in the United States it's on 25 October.
Oh, it's another one like Skyfall where they get it first.
Well, that's just wrong. What the heck? We are the United States of America, Julie.
That's what I said for the James Bond movie. What was wrong with
them? Unbelievable.
I don't care if it was the 50th anniversary of James Bond. Great movie, by the way. But come on. What I'm hearing from my brother in Germany and Joseph from Zombie Parents Guide in London, and they're like, it's great. I guess you guys get it in a week or two. And I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Are we not still triumphant in Hollywood? What the heck is going on?
This is just not right.
You're right. The world turned upside down again. Just like
That'll be great.
At the end of the world.
That'll be wonderful. Fun to see. Fun to see.
I know. I don't know much about it. So
Yeah, I don't know anything about it other than the name. I know that
Edgar Wright.
Edgar what's
Wright.
His name? Yeah, it's directed by Edgar Wright, and Martin Freeman is also in it.
Oh,
yep.
Even better.
Yep.
I'm sorry.
It's great.
Did I say that?
He was so good in The Hobbit. He made The Hobbit.
That's what I heard.
Yeah. Yeah, he was terrific.
No matter what anybody said, they all praised his performance.
Yeah, it was just like every time he was on the screen, you were like, it's working, it's working, it's working.
Yeah. Yep. More of that, right?
Yep, exactly, exactly. So, well, all right. Well, it is wonderful to be with you again in 2013.
I know.
So, another year. Now, next time we're doing something a little bit different.
That's that third season change up thing. You gotta watch out
there
for
it is. Hopefully we'll both survive this episode. So next time, 2 weeks down the road, we're going to talk about Introduction to the Devout Life by Saint Francis de Sales. Is that how you pronounce his name?
Probably. I Americanize it Saint Francis de Sales.
De Sales. De Sales.
Cringing. I Saint can't
Francois.
Help it. It's de Sales.
Francois de Sales. That's what I'm talking about right now.
Yeah, but it's a classic book that was, I think, first published in 1609 or something.
Yeah. Yep.
So
that's interesting, all these who's contemporary with whom. Yeah, it's always interesting. You know, wasn't the Don Quixote is like one of the first novels ever written, if not the first. Wasn't that in the 1600s in Spain?
Oh, probably so.
Yeah.
Well, and this was really, really unusual for the time, and even up into fairly modern times, actually, because it was written for what Catholics would call lay people. It was written for the average person, mm-hmm. not for somebody who had a religious vocation.
Yeah.
Because my book club's doing it, so I just sent a little blurb out on it. So that's
cool.
I know I sound so erudite, but yeah. So, and from my reading so far, it is. It's very, very useful.
Good, 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 good.
I find. Yep,
I'm well into it.
I picked the next movie.
Ooh.
Called Mostly Martha.
Mostly Martha.
It's German.
Okay.
It's a movie that will be good for Valentine's Day.
Oh, cool.
That's we'll be close to then when we're talking about it.
Okay.
And then I also picked my book.
Ooh, okay.
Talking about science fiction.
Oh, cool.
Jurassic Park.
Hey, Michael Crichton.
And dinosaurs.
Excellent. Yeah. Oh, that'll be good.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a neat pick, that one. That's cool.
I love that book.
Yep.
I can't tell you how many times I've read it. I know, well, which now cool. people are rolling their eyes going, really, Michael Crichton? How many times have you read it? Oh, okay.
How funny. Oh, that's neat. That's neat.
Yeah.
Well, good. So okay.
Fun. Yeah.
Fantastic. Looking forward to both of those. Yeah. I have no idea what Mostly Martha is, but cool.
Yeah. It's just, you know, I would say romantic comedy, except it's not exactly, but it's no Mary and Max. So yeah. It's just, you know.
I love how you pick movies that I've never even heard of. It's neat.
I'm sorry.
I love that. Okay.
I had actually.
And it
I
is
had,
on Netflix. So I'm oh, good. Choosing well, it right now. I'm moving it to movies. Position one. It's not streaming on Netflix. It's DVD on Netflix, DVD? Which is fine.
Mm-hmm. Plan ahead, everyone.
Plan ahead.
Well, I had two other movies I was thinking about, and then I had some correspondence with Mark, I don't know how you say his name, Ertl,
mm-hmm.
our friend in Cologne, yes. Germany.
Yep.
And I thought, in tribute to Mark, I'm just going to pick this German movie that I love.
Oh, that's great.
I can't say that about a lot of movies. I don't know if I've watched a lot of German movies, but I love this one.
Oh, that's cool.
So, This is for Mark.
Excellent. Hi, Mark.
Yes.
That's great.
And also our family loves it, so. Yeah.
Excellent. All right.
So.
Okay. Well, we'll see you in a couple weeks then.
Yeah. Happy New Year, everyone.
Happy New Year to everybody. And thanks again for listening.
Yeah.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.